Why don't they tell us something? I mean, where are all the other dead people in the world? Why is it just you and me?
Maybe this is heaven.
Heaven, there wouldn't be dust on everything.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 23. I'm Scott Johnson, and yet again, another fine film pulled from the archives in the deep recesses of Netflix streaming and other sources. We recommend you do the same. This week's movie is awesome. Before we get to that, let me introduce who's here. First, joining us is Mr. Randy Jordan.
Glad to be here, Scott. And I'll eat anything you want me to eat. I'll swallow anything you want me to swallow. But come on down and I'll chew on a dog.
Chew on a dog. Awesome. Also joining us is that laughing fool in the background. That is Mr. Brian Dunaway.
Hey, I'm Alec Baldwin, back when I was still skinny.
And hot. What a hot.
And hot.
Hunky.
Yeah. Oh, man, he was wearing them pants. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Sporting I hope a so. Package. What else would he be wearing, Brian? Like a kilt?
And also, bringing up the rear this week, we have Brian Ibbett.
You know, you must never, under any circumstances, contact Beetlejuice. Never call him. Never ask him for help. But if you do, if you want to, you just have to say his name three times.
Yeah, but what's his real name? Is it Beetlejuice or Beetlegeist?
You kept saying... They played a little trick on you there. He kept reading it Beetlegeist, and that way he could continue to say it out loud without actually calling Beetlejuice.
Right. It was their way to get around Alec Baldwin accidentally triggering him.
I cannot believe I didn't get that until you just said it.
Well, that changed the whole movie.
I didn't get it. I thought this whole time that I could never go, well, why aren't they just saying that name that's on everything? Why do they have to say Beetlejuice? It's easier to spell. Like, I couldn't figure it out. But now you guys, I mean, holy crap, 20 years later and...
So obvious.
So obvious. All right, well, if you don't know what movie we're talking about, we just said it. It's Beetlejuice. And Scott Fletcher has more to say on the subject, more specific things to say, better than we can. Here it is.
Beetlejuice. Thanks to an untimely demise via drowning, a young couple, played by Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis, end up as poltergeists in their New England farmhouse, where they fail to meet the challenge of scaring away the insufferable new owners, who want to make drastic changes. In desperation, the undead newlyweds turn to an expert Frightmaster, played by Michael Keaton, but he's got a diabolical agenda of his own. This dark comedy classic snagged an Oscar for Best Makeup.
Oh, well, Best Makeup. Good work.
Yep.
It actually did.
And from the time, it was pretty decent.
Yeah. It had a lot of, I feel like there was a lot of Tim Burton thrown in his artwork here.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like what you saw later on in his book, Nightmare Before Christmas, and the subsequent movie is very reminiscent of the makeup and some of the effects in this thing. Which were interesting. So here's the breakdown of the movie. Of course, Tim Burton is the director. Everyone knows who he is. Don't have to really focus on that. Michael McDowell and Larry Wilson were the writers. They went on to do such terrible things as a lot of TV stuff that I can't remember, but none of it really great. For whatever reason, this was like their real first stab at films. Larry Wilson did some other stuff, but not much. It starred Alec Baldwin, like you mentioned, a much younger, like... younger than it, Red October.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. Yeah. Weird to see him in this. Okay. Something else I didn't know. Never knew that was him until I watched it again.
Oh, really? Me too. I did not realize that from a kid. Well, I never knew who Alec Baldwin was when I was a kid. And by the time I seen him when I was a grown up, I was like, who's this guy?
Well, you know who I thought it was? There's a blonde actor in a lot of 80s movies. And he was also in a couple of... kind of Oh, it's just on the tip of my tongue. So, Brian Ibbett, you have to help me with this because you say if I think of something else, it'll come out.
I'm going to back Scott up.
What else was he in, this blonde actor?
Don't remember.
Was it Jeff Fahey?
No. It was not Lapidus. Crap, I can't remember it, but he's from Utah, so I should remember this. Anyway, he was in a lot of 80s movies like
Utah.
St. Elmo's Fire, stuff like that.
You're not thinking Anthony Edwards.
No, but he's in that zone. He's in that range. Yeah. That era. Oh. Blonde.
Emilio Estevez.
He took his pants off in a Robert Altman movie I saw.
Tim Burton? No.
Tim Burton.
Not Tim Burton. Tim Robbins.
No.
He didn't take his pants off in that movie.
Oh, we could do this all day, but I can't think of what the hell it is. Anyway, blonde guy was in a whole bunch of stuff that I cannot think of at all. Oh, Matthew Modine. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Matthew Modine.
I always thought Matthew Modine was the this dude.
Yeah.
I always did until this viewing. Thought that's who that was.
Well, I don't remember Alec Baldwin really ever wearing glasses in anything else.
Well, no. Yeah, I don't think he did.
Yeah.
Or such perfect hair in anything else.
Well, it seems like there was right around that time, and I'm pulling up, I want to pull up his listing here to see what other movies, but it seems like right around this time, Alec Baldwin was just getting tons of movie roles. It was like almost a heyday for him for getting pictures.
Well,
but
he was on my first memories of him, he was on Knott's Landing at the time. Wow. He was on Knott's Landing for like a whole season. He was in, or maybe two seasons. He was in a bunch of episodes of that show.
I didn't know he was on any TV at all, but looks like right
my
around.
Parents watched Knott's Landing, so Alec Baldwin was a part of like every week in my life.
So she's having a baby the year before he was in that.
Yeah, he was Kevin Bacon's sleazy buddy.
Yeah, his work buddy. I really like that movie. Yeah. Married to the Mob, Working Girl, Talk Radio, you know, some pretty good stuff. But it wasn't until, I want to say, Hunt for Red October in 1990, I think that's when he really became.
It was those early 90s, yeah.
Yeah, he was the Baldwin brother to watch at that point.
Yeah, I think he's the one to watch now.
I think so, too. I mean, the guy has perfected his comic timing.
Oh, yes, he is great on 30 Rock. There's no question about it. And he's no stranger to some really crazy personal problems in his life. But I really like the guy, and I think he's funny as crap. Did not know he was in Clerks, but I've only seen Clerks once, so what do I know?
Really?
Yeah, I had no idea.
Oh.
But, well, I'm putting that down in my list of stuff that Scott's only seen once.
Yeah. Anyway, big fan of that guy. I also think his brother, I think it's maybe Steven, was great in The Usual Suspects, but other than that, those guys are unremarkable.
Oh, he was in the Clerks cartoon.
The TV show.
Oh, right. It was the cartoon. Oh, all right.
Cartoon, yeah. Which is excellent, by the way.
Yeah, it is good. It's a lot cleaner than the movie, I'll tell you that.
Yes. Woo.
Huge difference. It also has a few other players, but one important one was in Howard the Duck. That, of course, the return of Principal Rooney, Jeffrey Jones.
Mm. Yes.
In yet another 80s role. And this one really creeped me out because he did a whole bunch of stuff. And knowing his propensity toward child pornography, it kind of bothered me to watch him do it. So at one point he plants a big kiss on the 15-year-old Winona Ryder.
Yep,
and then
yep.
slapped her butt on the way out the door.
Right. I remember thinking, I'll bet he actually slapped like the small of her back because come on.
I think he enjoyed it is the problem I have.
Yeah.
So yeah, Jeffrey Jones, whatever. I like him and stuff. I think he was great in this, and I quite enjoyed his role. Of course, Michael Keaton, who spent way less time in the movie than I remembered. I thought he was like there every second of the movie, and he was barely in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's the star of the movie, and he's barely in it. Skeletor, I'm sorry, Gina Davis was in it.
Oh, see, I think between this and The Fly, Gina Davis never looked better.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Except
yeah,
in
really in this. In this wallpaper print dress she had on?
Well, yeah, okay. It doesn't really show for figure, but she always had that face. I've had such a crush on Gina Davis back in the late 80s, early 90s. And
really?
I did too.
Because I wanted her to turn around and go, "Listen here, He-Man, your plan will fail."
Too skinny for you, huh? Or is it just the really
No, it's her. It's her literally
cheekbone.
It's her literally saying things like "Man at arms, you'll never get to my castle in time." No, she just, I don't know what it is about her. She's fine. I really liked, I'm one of those people that really likes In a League of Their Own. I think that's a great movie.
Yes. That was my favorite movie of hers, I think I've ever seen.
Yeah. So I like Gina
Davis.
Stuart Little, dude.
Stuart Little. Michael Keaton. Hugh Laurie that was in that?
Michael Keaton, the mouse. Oh, Hugh Laurie was in that?
Yeah, he was the husband.
Oh.
I disconnected that because I was trying to remember who was in it, and I'm like, who was the husband? And I was like, I said, wait a minute, mine.
Dr. House.
Yeah. Don't forget Catherine O'Hara. She's always good. She
is always good. She's, you know, she's one of those people that they always go to for the Christopher Guest, Michael McKean movies, and she's always awesome.
Yeah.
And then, I know I find that I always say this about a woman every episode of Film Sack, but she's got the choice role in this film.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Like, I thought you were going to say you were going to hit
role
that.
Yeah.
No, probably not, because we'll get more comments in the blog.
Woo. Oh, that was a little bit of feedback on that.
Yeah, a little feedback. Get some feedback.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, now, all this being said, great cast, fairly good acting, director we like, blah, 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 blah. I did not like this movie. And I liked it the first time a lot. And I thought at the time when I saw it as a kid, I guess I wasn't a kid, I'd have been 17 or 18. I thought it was really great. And I remember wanting to see it again and again and again. And we did. And we thought it was funny and weird. And I love Danny Elfman's score. And I still think that's pretty good. But it's the purest form of the Danny Elfman, Tim Burton thing. Like it's as Danny Elfman as you'll ever hear. Because lately he does some stuff that's pretty diverse. But back in the day, it all sounded like this. And I like that okay. But the movie itself did not hold up in almost every way for me. Stuff felt stilted, badly acted, good actors badly, you know, given bad material is more like it. A few things sort of stood out as, you know, playing their roles pretty good, I guess. But I just felt like it was just stilted and weird. And they would do really uncomfortable things, like her singing at the dinner table and the ghosts were, like, making them do stuff. That was just embarrassing.
Yeah, that...
And that, this stuff doesn't usually bother me, but I'm going to say something really controversial here. And I think I'll have Ibbot respond because I have a feeling Ibbot liked this movie again. I thought that Howard the Duck was on par with this.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm not saying it's worse. I'm just going to say it's just about that same range for me. So, rebut, what would you say to that?
The gloves are off, Mr. Johnson. Mm. No, I think this is, you know, okay. So, I'll admit, first of all, that a little bit of the acting is over the top. And certainly, Michael Keaton's acting is over the top, but it should be. I'd even go so far as to say Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin's acting is a little bit over the top. But as far as the premise goes, there is no other movie that kind of goes out of comedy about what it's like when you die. You know, you've got a lot of dramas that try to do this with the whole, you know, I'm a ghost and I'm walking around seeing what happened with
I'm doing maybe clay pottery with Demi Moore.
But actually to have or meet Jill Black or whatever.
Right.
You know, the comedy of you get a handbook when you die that explains what you're supposed to do. There's a waiting room with other people, you know, other dead people to meet with your counselor, and everybody there is dead, and you see the way they died. I mean, it's really, really funny, like funny foreground stuff. But then you look at the stuff that's happening in the background too, and that's been really well thought out as well. You know, the stuff, especially in that the scene of the background, the waiting room when they're in there, when they actually do finally get to go back there, and they're going through the office area, and you see all the stuff going in the background, the football team that died and doesn't know that they're dead,
the guy that passes out paper hanging on the noose, that guy was great.
Right, sliding, yeah, exactly, just hanging, right, see him coming from the background, dropping paper as he comes forward.
Yeah.
It's stuff like that, and it's I think that part of the movie that for me carries the rest of the movie, because I feel like that is Tim Burton from the time that the first time that Alec Baldwin goes out into sandworm territory, Dune sandworm territory. I
Where
figure
are
that's
they?
That's when
there's Saturn.
Are they?
Yeah, Saturn.
Is it?
Okay.
What?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah,
how do we know this?
There's big sock because puppet worms on Saturn. What the hell? I've never even heard of
they
this.
They say it in the movie.
Oh, I missed that.
I missed it too.
Oh, weird.
Brandy.
But I figure that's when Tim Burton finally said, okay, this is the point of the movie where I can kind of really let myself go and do all the stuff that I want to do. I feel like the stuff beforehand is, you know, cute little fluffy romantic comedy stuff, but it's when Tim Burton kind of picks it up from there. And the Harry Belafonte scene, you know, with them around the table, I actually really like, especially the giant shrimp hands that come down and pull their faces into the food at the
end
of
it. Okay, I'm going to agree with you on all those points about the strong points. And I think the waiting room is one of my favorite scenes in movies, period. I love the little shrunken head dude. I love the guy that smokes.
So funny.
Like the smoker dude that says he's trying to quit.
With the cigarette and saying, I'm trying to give these up.
Yeah, very effective, weird kind of like combination of puppetry and head through the wall kind of stuff happening there. Yeah. And that stuff is truly genius and better than any Howard the Duck entire film will ever be. I'll give you that. I just feel like everything else sucked.
I love the breathing that shrunken head guy does. He looks like he's constantly sighing. Like,
he can barely breathe, dude. The little shrimpy head. Yeah, that stuff is good. I can't, that's hard to argue with. I guess my problem was in the end, it felt like all of the other stuff was really weak in comparison. Weaker than it should have been or weaker than I remember it.
Yeah.
I
think execution to me didn't seem to be as fluid as it did when I was younger. I don't know if I've just got a different frame of mind. But,
well, even for, I just mean by Tim Burton standards, like I feel like Pee-wee's Big Adventure had better pacing, for example. And was,
yeah, maybe it's the pacing. Maybe that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, which is weird because Beetlejuice is only an hour and a half long. It's a 90-minute movie. It's short by most standards. And usually those kinds of movies, especially ones like this where it's very fanciful and crazy, you expect that to go real quick. And there were times where I just was like, oh, we're just going to stand and look at each other. And what is that? That's a terrible edit. And what's going on? It's like, oh yeah, they're in the waiting room. That's awesome. And then it would just get weird and bleary to me again. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I will fully admit it may be completely down to my taste. And this one just didn't hold up to whatever my tastes are now. But I'll agree with you though. That waiting room, Halloween
at Disney World.
I want that smoking guy sitting on my porch like for Halloween. Trying to quit myself, he says. That guy was great. Anyway, Randy,
the caseworker that every time she takes a drag on her cigarette, the smoke comes out of the
yeah,
you know,
she,
on her
she
neck.
May have been my favorite Flesh and Blood character. I thought she was great. Randy, what are your what is your take? Because I think you're more in my camp than I know you're not as far maybe as me. But how do you feel about it?
I definitely don't. The movie's dated. It's really dated.
Yeah.
It suffers so badly now because, for one thing, if you just are going to date it on one thing, this was a time in our filmmaking history when foolishly, apparently, filmmakers thought that Michael Keaton could star in a movie. And he's just, he was never good in any movie. And he certainly never made a movie good.
Johnny Dangerously, the dude. That's a good movie, right?
Oh, I like Johnny Dangerously. I'd even argue Multiplicity.
All right.
That's what I was going to say. Multiplicity was okay.
No, I won't give you Multiplicity, but I'll give you Johnny Dangerously. But the fact, like, and also he's got that role that so many actors have long dreamed of, which is the role where you are expected in the film and you come on the scene late in the movie.
Yeah.
And even then, when he finally gets into the film, he's just such a drag. He's just not good. And it actually would have been a better movie without him or his character entirely, you know?
I kind of agree with that. What's interesting is I wonder if you would have liked the original thing before, because the original script was basically a horror film. It was not intended to be more of this sort of comedy goofball thing. And it featured Beetlejuice as a winged reptilian demon who transformed into a small Middle Eastern man to interact with the Maitlands and the Deetzies or whatever. Lydia was a minor character in that case, and she was 6 years old. Beetlejuice's goal was to kill the Maitlands rather than frighten them away. And let's see, it included a sequence where he mauled Kathy in the form of a rabid squirrel and tried to rape Lydia. I mean, they've really changed. Wow. They really changed from this original vision of.
I take it back. I like this version.
This is the best Beetlejuice they could have made.
Me too. I'm very happy.
Yeah.
But the film has ups and downs. You guys have talked about some of the ups. I would say most of the normal part of the film, you know, it's like this is a two halves movie, and the first half is fairly normal. Admittedly, you know, these people are dead and they don't know it at first and blah, 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 but it's still fairly normal. And then it goes off the rails, and it's supposed to. But the abnormal second half, I mean, I need explanation. I came out of this movie going, okay, I didn't understand some of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Felt a little slapped together.
And a film should really, it shouldn't be that difficult to understand the motives and why did they, you know, why did Beetlejuice do this and that? And I still don't get the end at all. It makes no sense to me, but.
Juliette Lewis originally auditioned for the role of Lydia. Lori Loughton, Diane Lane, Sarah Jessica Parker. She looks like a horse. Brooke Shields. Justine Bateman, Molly Ringwald, and Jennifer Connelly all turned down the role. So,
oh no,
oh, holy crap! I mean, mm-hmm. I guess they got to the end of that, and Winona Ryder's like, "I'll do it. I'll be happy to do it."
What had she done before this? Anything? Was this pre or post Heathers?
This was Lucas. Which just connects us to a couple of film sacks ago. She was in that, and then some other little Midland thing in the middle, and then this. So this is a very early role and kind of what put her on the road to success. So, I mean, none of these other people did too bad for themselves. I just think that it's a weird role to turn down. I don't, you know, before this, other than some TV stuff, Tales from the Crypt stuff and other crap, this was the first movie, real movie, that Tim Burton directed again since Pee-wee's Big Adventure. So he was still a relative unknown, and you could argue that Beetlejuice put him on the map. This is the Tim Burton that everybody went freaky about, and every time he made a new movie, everybody got real excited.
I think that's one of the things that gets me about this movie is I was so – during the time, it was so new, this whole idea of what Tim Burton was doing, and no one else really had a vision like this. And so I think I was distracted by the vision of what he has, and now it's so old hat to me that when I got past all of the vision of what he does, there didn't seem to be anything left.
Yeah. No, I'm.
Well, and that's exactly what we talk about, though, when we talk about dating films, is do we give the film all the credit that we can for being, you know, good at the time? Or can we help ourselves but compare it to films we've seen since then and recent works? And try to somehow rate it among, you know, like say Tim Burton's last three movies. And both cases I think are a bit unfair, but I understand why people cling to the films they loved from 20 and 40 and 60 years ago. Because if you saw this movie when it first came out and when people were really eating it up, I hope that you have gotten to continue to enjoy it, because I can't.
Yeah, I tried. I tried really hard.
I'm just the opposite of I agree with Randy that I did not enjoy this movie as much as I was hoping I would. It just seemed to fall flat. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is just ridiculous, but it just seemed kind of boring to me. And I'm going to disagree with Randy on Michael Keaton's role, because I think it was perfect. I thought he was totally obnoxious, and I really felt like that was what they were trying to go for.
We agree.
I'm teetering over here. I gotta find a way to get back into team Deluxeaway.
Deluxeaway.
You know who would have been really good in the Beetlejuice role is Johnny Depp.
Yeah, Johnny Depp.
Make it with Johnny Depp.
I'm sure at a different time it would have. Don't you guys think maybe this boils down to the fact that what passed for fantastic in that age has been redefined. This is not fantastic anymore. This is a lot of puppetry and stuff that you just kind of...
It was stop motion in this film. I mean, the snake scenes were stop motion. So it was like, wow, really? Yeah, I thought we was further along than that, but I guess not.
You can't see Jurassic Park or The Matrix or Avatar. Notice how I just jumped through decades right there.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't see those and not have that bar raised. And so when you go back to something that's supposed to be that again, it doesn't work. Yeah. Well, the movie we talked about last week, that stuff still worked for me because of its theatrical way they do it. It's done in a way that is, I don't even know how to describe that. It's a very different approach to material like that. Whereas this was like cutting edge 20 years ago, totally obsolete now. And it just threw me for a loop.
I think there are some special effects that don't hold up like that. I think that there's others that work because it's low technology, like stretching their faces out, near the end of the film when they're giving scariness one last try, and they like, you know, stretches her face out and pops her eyes out onto her fingers, or he pops his eyes out onto his fingers. Stuff like that works because it's cheesy and looks fake and looks plastic. When she's hanging in the closet and she rips her face off while she's dangling from the noose, that was really good.
The sandworms
are absolutely, you know, they feel like early 80s,
just dated.
Mid 80s.
So doesn't it kind of make you wish that he would have insisted on more of this kind of puppetry approach and more stuff that was just weird like that? Because that stuff, like I said, totally worked. The smoking guy will forever be in one of my favorite images of all time. In movies, he really will. I'll say that about this movie. It has one of my favorite looking things in it. And to this day, it's still just like, oh, yeah, that dude. I can't wait to see that guy again. And the little shrunken head guy.
A lot of great sight gags.
Yeah. By the way, the shrunken head guy, the reason I think he appeals to me is he reminds me a lot of the shrimp, the Muppets dude that's a shrimp.
I could see that.
He does.
Do you know what I'm talking about? He looks just like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of a beaker
or
thing,
beaker
too.
Beaker, even.
Yeah. Beaker. He's got that whole beaker thing going on.
He's got the beaker thing. Good times. All right, well, let's get into some clips here. By the way, producer John Peters thought of casting controversial comedian Sam Kinison as Beetlejuice. This is the worst part. But Kinison's agent never told him before he died. That's terrible.
Whoops.
Sheesh.
Aw.
I know.
How sad.
I know. Oh.
Now that would have been fantastic.
Sorry. That was my Kinison. Did you hear that?
Yeah, we heard it. That would have been. I don't know. I have mixed feelings on that.
What? On Kinison?
Sam, yeah. No, on your impression. Oh. Yeah, Sam Kinison. About him playing Beetlejuice. I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems like Robin Williams probably would have been a contender for this, too, with his whole stream of consciousness kind of thing.
Anyone else we could have put in there from the time? Maybe.
Maybe Michael Keaton was just cheaper. Is that possible?
He was just cheap. Certainly possible. Yeah.
Well, up till then, he hadn't done a ton of stuff. He had a lot of bit parts and things, but wasn't a leading dude. I mean, this is what gave him leading dude status. It's what led to the very next year. I'm here to remind you guys. 1 year later, Batman. So Tim Burton went from obscure Pee Wee Herman director, Beetlejuice. I mean, obviously, Beetlejuice is an enormous thing on his resume. It would have to be. You don't get Batman the very next year if you're not being noticed. And you're not being noticed for Pee Wee's Big Adventure. I mean, you kind of are, but not really. nobody went to Pee Wee's Big Adventure and went, there's something about this movie. It says Batman to me. Let's get him on the phone. That's not that kind of movie. But Beetlejuice said, ooh, look what he can do with light and sound and effects and blah. And this Michael Keaton guy looks like he might make a good Bruce Banner, although I never bought into that because he's too damn short. But anyway, the point is, obviously, this movie means a whole lot more to Tim Burton than it does to me.
Yeah, Wayne. I know.
Yeah, I know.
Little Wayne.
Bruce Banner.
What did I say? Bruce Banner? Did I say Bruce Banner?
Bruce.
Crap.
Yeah.
All right. So when he became the Hulk, when he became Lou Ferrigno, all bets are off.
It's a 50 geek cred minus right there.
Oh, man. That hurts.
Because you didn't know what to do. All right. Let's play. This is a clip of Alec Baldwin trying to read a book. Apparently, he is a terrible reader. I'd heard that about him. Now we know it's true.
Handbook for the recently deceased.
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 I don't know where it came from. Look at that publisher.
Handbook for the recently deceased press.
You know what? I don't think we survived the crash.
Okay, Gina Davis, speak the hell up. Seriously. In this whole movie, she's just mousy. Just me, 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 me. Why couldn't she belt out? I don't know. I had a hard time with her.
You don't get any angry acting from Gina Davis.
Not a bit.
Not once. And I understand her character is supposed to be kind of mousy and sweet and Amish in a way and all that. But she just struck me as too quiet, too too non-committed to the role, just too kind of just sitting there making faces.
For this movie, one of the things that really bugged me about this movie, not to go away from this clip too far, but the way they died, it was just, it didn't seem violent enough.
Right.
You wanted
right.
it to be worse?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. It seems like something that they potentially could have survived. Oh, no, the car flipped over. Great. Yeah. Let's just hold our breath, undo our seatbelts, open the door, and swim out.
I know. It was a creek. I mean, it didn't like it was going to really go much deeper than the 2 foot it already had sunk in. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That was a heavy dog, too, by the way.
Yeah.
See, I do like the, you know, the like dog that. Balancing on the board. Yeah.
I like that. I thought that was a cute scene. I don't think they filmed it properly. They filmed it too far away. Something wasn't right about it. There was comedic gold there, but they didn't mine deep enough.
Hey, I like that.
What bothered me so much was in this, you know, in the next scene, they're dead. They're realizing they're dead. There's a book that purports to tell them everything they need to know, and they're just so, like, it's the last thing on their mind. You know? And then, you know, they end up later, people are telling them, didn't you read the book? And I'm like, yeah, didn't you read the book? I would have read the book 17 times. Well, how are these people's? What it did was it made those characters really stupid, you know?
Yeah. But the only thing is, I still quote that one Alec Baldwin, and I didn't realize this who it was at the time. Whenever I have to put furniture together or anything like that, I still quote, hey, this reads like stereo instructions. And my wife always looks like I'm stupid.
You got that from there? Did you even know you got
it
from there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I totally knew I got it from there.
Oh, that's funny. I don't have any phrases from Beetlejuice I still use.
That was it. That's the only one I ever used. I don't even know if it's that original. It's just that for some reason, I don't know why, but I find it humorous.
Occasionally I say, nice effing model or whatever, and grab my crotch. Yeah, holy freaky F-bomb in the middle of a movie that just didn't seem to have any other swearing.
Didn't seem out of place, yeah.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, I'm not Mr. Anti-F-bomb in a movie, but when you stick it in the middle of it, like essentially a kid's movie, or sort of a kid's movie, but generally a family movie, family fare, and it suddenly just explodes on you like that with him grabbing his wiener. You just go, whoa, slow down, Tex. Sheesh. All right. Moving on. Got another call.
Another call?
Yeah. By the way.
From the movie?
From the movie. Did I say a call? I have another file to play.
the movies are calling in now.
I may be thinking
it's the 1980s
about
1980s calling.
I hear Andy's voice and I think calls. We got to do calls.
That is so funny.
All right, this one is We Are Dead Rules. I don't remember what this is. So, Mr. Clip, here it goes.
Jane,
in the book rule number 2, the living usually won't see the dead.
Won't or can't?
It just says won't. God, this book is so stupid. I can't understand anything in there.
Barb, honey. We're dead. I don't think we have very much to worry about anymore.
Alec Baldwin still sounds the same.
Yeah. And his timing is almost, his comedic timing is almost there. I love when he's reading the front of the book from the previous clip where he's like, you know,
really?
Diseased. And well, then he stops. Deceased.
Well, and this is a clip where Gina Davis finds her voice a little bit, so I can't say it's all bad. She did okay.
I got to say, they really make it. I'm a homebody. And of course, they're supposed to be on vacation at home. And I kind of love this whole idea, even though they're dead. So what? They don't have anything to worry about.
Just going
to
hang out.
Yeah, just hang out. And that was the point. It's like, okay, this isn't so bad. And then the next scene. Mm. Here come the deets.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The deets. Yeah. Here comes Jeffrey Jones with his pervert magazine and his family. And his daughter, who's dressed in a straw black hat and a veil. Come on, dude.
Yeah.
Right.
The original emo girl.
That's another example of something that I was totally cool with in 1989. And now it bugged me every time I saw that character. Mm-hmm. I thought, this is not a representation of any kind of human being. Like, there's no teenager who looks like this ever.
During the 80s?
Yeah. Well, no, during any time, it's
especially
like
not during the 80s.
It's supposed to be this angsty representation, you know, like this. She's emo. No one understands her. Life is a big void to her. Blah blah blah. But to wear what she wore just was crazy. It was crazy.
Yeah. If only she would have had a Michael Jackson jacket with some bicycle reflectors on the shoulders. Then
that's so funny.
That's right.
The one bit about her character I did not understand is she was obviously a photo bug, which they had established, but she kept taking pictures of people. And I'm like, if she's so deep and dark, shouldn't she be taking pictures of like spiders or something? That just seemed
dead
like
bird on the
dead bird or something.
Or something.
Yeah, yeah, that seemed like it'd be more appropriate to what her character would do. This is kind of things that kind of upset me.
I'm not gonna lie. I was 17 or 18 the year this came out. I had a huge crush on Winona Ryder in this movie.
Winona Ryder was it.
All people who had any interest in the female species of the species were had a crush on Winona Ryder.
Yeah, now she's like
and
a
you
crazy.
You didn't have to say you would do anything like, you know.
Yeah, you know.
Tap it.
Tap it.
Stuff.
Look at you.
That said.
Yeah.
That said, and you know, you did that description of what the original script was supposed to be with it being a horror film and the rabid squirrel raping Lydia.
Right.
I would, you know, thinking about her character being a 6-year-old actually would have probably helped the movie. Like, if it wasn't Winona Ryder as this character, but just like this little innocent doe-eyed 6-year-old that is able to see the ghosts and isn't afraid of them.
Like a Dakota actually, Fanning in her younger days kind of thing.
They did that more in the animation.
Yeah, which wasn't bad. Yeah. I like that thing. I like the cartoon.
Yeah,
I thought the cartoon was great.
That felt more like to me what Beetlejuice should have been.
I feel like Beetlejuice would have been a better film had it been animated. You do this in like incredible style, you know, very anamorphic characters and all that. That would be a really fun retelling of this.
Mm,
mark my words. Mark my words. It'll happen. Remake of Beetlejuice. He's already doing a remake of Frankenweenie next year. So,
no, really?
Oh yeah, dude.
Why do a remake? Why not just make a part two?
Well, Frankenweenie is being remade as a 3D animated film, so it's not him doing a new live action version of a short film. It's going to be that. I don't think Don Johnson.
Yeah, they were trying to get some investors for this other project, and someone said, "Could we do it in 3D?" And all of a sudden, the money started raining.
So yeah, it's out.
Well, then we're probably.
Oh, man, one of the things that gets me: Clash of Titans, the trailer. They keep going. It goes Clash of Titans in 3D.
I'm seeing it in 2D. I'm seeing it in 2D. I'm not even bothering with that. I can't wait for that movie. I cannot wait for to see. We haven't seen it yet, but we are going to see it. We're late seeing it, but we want to see what is it? Dragon Tamer or How to Tame a Dragon or whatever?
Oh,
How to Tame a Dragon.
That thing's getting.
I'm going to say the blind.
It's getting raves, from people. The Blind Side. Actually, I do want to see that
in 3D.
What? A serious man in 3D.
That's right. When he's tuning the antenna on the roof, it flies in your face.
No. All right, we got another call. Gosh dang it, freaking Brian. We have another clip, and this is.
Hi, it's Winona Ryder.
This is the scene. This is the
I'm
scene.
I'm available.
Where, I'm a little crazy now. I shoplift. She is crazy now.
Oh, by the way, what is that? What is about Winona Ryder that elicits this feeling of lack of trust? Like, she's an actress.
The fact that she's a shoplifter?
Yeah. Well, No. I mean her performances. On screen.
Oh, yeah,
you
that's true.
You get the feeling like, I can't trust this lady.
Ever. Yeah. In any movie she's in, you're totally right about it. Alien 4, she was untrustworthy, and she was a robot. If you can't trust your robots, then what can you trust?
Well, she was pretty duplicitous in Heathers.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Alien 4. I'm not afraid to say it. I like that movie a lot.
You should be.
I like it. I like it a lot.
I would even stand up and defend Alien 3 against anybody.
Yeah, I like Alien 3. They're all fine, dude. AVP stuff can go to hell, but all the Alien movies, they all have their own strengths. The AVP stuff's terrible. All I'm saying about the Alien 4 is that was written by Joss Whedon in it, and I always liked it. Not just because he wrote it, but just saying.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. We got the scene where Jeffrey Jones gets licked by Catherine O'Hara.
Yes.
And I capture the clip because it's very visual. You can't actually see. You can kind of hear it. But I just wonder if she regrets this now. Like, if this is something that haunts her in the night.
I licked a pervert.
I licked that pervert Principal Rooney on the nose. Because she did that. So here's that scene.
10 minutes. I'm already perfectly at ease.
Delia.
You're right.
Let's get one thing straight.
You're right.
We're here to enjoy the country setting, not to trash the place.
You're right.
Charles, you're lucky the yuppies are buying condos so you can afford what I'm going to have to do to this.
Also, I'm here to relax and clip coupons. And damn it, I mean to do it.
Then go do it quietly, dear, and let off what I think.
Okay, could you hear the end there where she licked him right up the face?
Yeah.
Big old slathery tongue right up Jeffrey Jones's beak.
Ugh. I didn't have to hear it.
I was wondering when I saw that again, I was wondering if that was written into the script or if that was just something, sense of humor from SCTV and all those other things. Okay. I could actually see that being a spontaneous, or not a spontaneous, but something that she came up for her character, came up with.
So she may have improv that, maybe, you're thinking.
Maybe, yeah.
Like she used to with Eugene Levy licking him up the side of the face.
Yeah, so yeah, that was John Candy and
Rick
Candy.
Moranis. Come here, Doug McKenzie. Anyway, so there was that. I thought that was gross, and I couldn't stop thinking about it.
It was gross.
Kind of ruined the movie.
Thought it was gross. It was gross.
Yeah. Did you also hear, did you hear Jeffrey Jones there channeling his demon voice from?
I did. Yeah. Yeah.
Howard the Duck.
Yeah, totally.
I have no idea, Mo. I can't stop.
You do that pretty good. But I will not be licking you in the face.
No.
I'm unable to.
That's
commit
disgusting.
That's a thing. All right. Commercial time. This is the scene that Randy sort of alluded to in his opening comments on today's show. This is Michael Keaton at his worst or best. It's for you to decide.
Having trouble with a living? You're tired of having your home space violated? You want to get rid of them pesky living critters once and for all? Well, come on down and see me, folks, because I'm the afterlife's leading bioexorcist. Yes, sir. Come on down here, and I want to tell you, I'll do anything. I'll scare them real bad. The point is, folks, I'm going to do anything to get your business.
Ugh, okay, I can't even do the whole freaking thing. It's horrible.
And I wish they would have, you know, it's obviously him on the model. And I wish they would have, you know, done something where he looks over on the model and sees his cow pulled over, you know.
Yeah, there's some kind of, that model was fantastic.
Oh, I know. It's maybe the best performance of the movie was that model. That was amazing.
I mean, the whole opening shot, I mean, you watch the whole opening shot, for those who haven't seen the movie, when it opens up, they actually go over the model with the camera, and it looks so realistic that you can almost take yourself out of it and believe that, hey, this isn't a model. This is really them flying over someplace.
Yeah, you don't notice until they get closer to that house that you're starting to see some signs that, wait a minute, this doesn't look right. And then the spider comes.
Crawls over it, yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty creepy. But up to that point, it's very impressive. And as a kid, I was fascinated with that stuff.
Yeah.
I thought miniatures was where it was at, man. I wanted to be on those stages in, you know, Lucasfilm where they're have the Millennium Falcon flying through the trenches and stuff. And I just thought that kind of stuff was so awesome. And this was no different. That was maybe one of my favorite things in the movie, if I could pick something out of this pile of trash. Because in the end, I just don't think it held up. And I feel like it's so today it's deluxe.
Oh yeah, it's a three. It's Team Ibbit and everybody else.
Yeah, it's Ibbit versus the volcano here because I don't know. I just found it not awesome. I wish I could say better things about it, but there are these great things. There are these things that are hallmarks of Tim Burton that you look at and go, oh, that's why we like him. And yes. I have to give it that. You know,
I would. Yeah, I felt like it was paced so slow. I really wish they could just picked it up some.
For an hour and a half, you'd think they could speed things up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, because most movies longer than that.
Yeah.
All right.
I would have liked to have seen a version of this where Tim Burton, you know, felt like he could go all out for the whole movie and not just on the underworld scenes.
Agreed.
I could see that totally. Yeah. I really do feel like they probably held him back some.
Yeah, the things that I love about Nightmare Before Christmas and what's that other one with Johnny Depp, the animated one that he did?
Corpse Bride.
Right. The thing I loved about those two movies were those things. And those things are, that's 2 hours of those things. And we just didn't get that much of it here. We got enough to go, and then back to Jeffrey Jones and Catherine O'Hara licking his face. it's not a good trade. Let's do our final clip this week. We have one of the old lady smoking through her neck. I just liked her performance, and I thought this was a bit of nice dialogue from her. Check it out.
As I evaluate individual cases and determine if help is needed, deserved, and available.
Are you available?
No.
We're very unhappy.
What did you expect? You're dead.
We want to get rid of the people who have moved in here. Barbara and I worked very hard on this house.
We probably wouldn't mind sharing the house with people who were...
more like you used to be.
Yes.
But these people.
Okay, have you been studying the manual?
Well, we tried.
The intermediate interface chapter on haunting says it all. Get them out yourselves. It's your house.
All right, it sounds like Randy saying, "Where's your damn book? Why didn't you read the book?" So
actually, I feel like
the whole movie hinges on that.
Yeah, yeah.
The book's everything, right? It's kind of like
I wish there was more about the book.
Yeah, read more of the book. That's
I know actually. And that would be a fun movie, too, is like, you know, her story in the afterlife of all these people that she comes in contact with who've recently died and what their, you know, what their issue is.
Yeah,
that would be great.
Wow, sounds great.
I didn't sell it very well.
I actually thought it sounded pretty good.
Didn't
realize
awesome.
I was agreeing something bad until Randy pointed it out.
it's like, you know, the player meets diner with a little bit of... I don't know.
Well, I do have a rule. I have a rule that I'll see anything with Dick Cavett in it. I'm a fan, even though I was too young to really know his heyday. Dick Cavett. Like
the
him
one
a lot.
Caveat.
Yeah. Yeah, the one caveat, the one Dick Cavett. He's great. I just think he's great. He was hardly in it. It's also weird to see. Was it Robert Goulet or who was that dude?
Yeah, Robert Goulet.
Yes, Maxie.
Yeah, I like him too. I could watch him in other things.
Yeah.
I love Robert Goulet.
I love Will Smith. Will
Smith.
Will Ferrell's. Will Smith's impression of Robert Goulet is a hell of a thing.
Oh, that is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
I just wonder, am I the only person who knows and understands this well enough to think that the character of Beetlejuice in this film is indistinguishable from the comedian Doug Stanhope?
I don't know who that is. Who's Doug Stanhope?
That's interesting.
All right. Never mind.
Who is he?
He's a comedian.
What would I know him from?
He and Joe Rogan replaced Adam Carolla and Jimmy Kimmel on The Man Show.
Yeah. Oh, that didn't last long.
No, they only had
I stopped
season.
Watching The Man Show.
I'm telling you, his
no
voice.
No amount of women on jumping trampolines for you, right, Brian?
Right. But his voice, the way he looks, the bags under his eyes. It is Doug Stanhope. Trust me on this.
Weird. Okay. Interesting. I'll have to look that guy up. I'll tell you.
I think we need to. I'm YouTubing him right now, and I can see what you're saying.
I think we should revisit the ending of this movie because I agree with Randy. It's like, hello, what just happened? Okay, so Claudia is suddenly their child now or something, and the rest of the family went back home or something.
Claudia, who the hell is Claudia? There. Who's Claudia? Oh, Lydia.
Where were they at? Well, what did I say?
You see
Claudia. You even see them like in another part of the house saying, oh, Lydia must have gotten an A on her math test.
She just likes being up there more. That's all.
Yeah. I think that must have been the part where I was rolling my eyes and I didn't see them.
Yeah, that may have
Here's
been.
Here's what you missed while you were rolling your eyes.
One thing about the ending, one of the things I did like, and again, the Tim Burton-esque stuff always works for me, is that weird dude that was performing the wedding ceremony that came out of the crazy fireplace remold thing. That was great. I love that.
Rockhead. Like glam Rockhead.
Yeah, that stuff's awesome. I love that kind of crap.
Well, I'll tell you what I hated about the ending. There's this weird scene where all of these adult women pour out of a girls' school, and they're all wearing these typical girls' uniforms. You're making this film. You're filming this scene. Could you not arrange for like one busload of actual girls to come out to the set for like 1 hour of filming? But no, you had to go get
they had a restraining order on
that. That was actually exactly because of Jeffrey Jones. They had to, stipulated in his contract, had to be adults.
Look, we'll let Catherine O'Hara lick him and he can touch what's her name's butt, but it's got to be a busload of women. That's great. We need him in more movies we cover.
I love him. I hate it. I hate that
he's such a douche because he is great. We talked about it shows ago, but I mean, and Randy, I know you agree with me at the time. He's one of the highlights of Deadwood. He's so great in that show. And there's no reason why he shouldn't be in more things now, except that he's a douche.
Yeah, that he's a big douche. And he done something wrong. I don't know how many times he did it either.
Some pretty bad stuff, you know?
But seriously, the sad thing about art, and especially movies, because music is a little different in this regard and all other art is, but especially movies, when you have a body of work and then you turn out, everybody finds out you're a big bag of douche, you cannot go backwards and erase it.
Nope.
You know, like you can't undo all this stuff for us.
Yeah.
All of our collective memories of, you know, Ferris Bueller or whatever.
Do you think when the cops were carting off all of his tapes and all of his videos, he put his hands in his face in his hands on the couch and said, oh, she licked my face in Beetlejuice. You know, I mean, Do you think he was worried about what people would think of his body of work as Rooney with a warm, you know, with a warm gummy bear in the pocket of the girl and all that kind of weird crap? I mean, that's the thing.
But it's just one of those things that sucks. Like,
yeah,
I'm not going to use the word heroes, but the people that entertain us often turn out to be a bag of douche.
Yeah,
and it's hard to accept.
Sometimes they don't, but oftentimes they do. Like Tom Hanks is not a douche, well, at least so far. He's doing all right.
Tom Cruise,
a douche. Yeah, for every Tom one out of every two Toms is a douche. Tom Arnold.
Mel Gibson, another great example of someone whose movies in the 80s and 90s we'd probably flock to, and then it turns out he's a douche.
And even if you look at his personal life, you could have said of Mel Gibson in the you know, last couple of decades, wow, look what a dedicated family guy he is. Got all these kids. He's been with the same wife for all this time. Seems like a dedicated dude. No, he'll find a model and have a midlife and freaking, you know, he's going to fall apart and hate Jews and do all this other stupid stuff. And it's like, okay, well, who do I have to believe in movies anymore? Harrison Ford? Dude, Harrison Ford was the guy, but now he's got the whole Calista Flockhart half his age bullcrap. All I'm saying is, look, you're 70 something years old, you got huge earrings, and you're walking around with Calista stinking. Talk about Skeletor. Hey. Indiana Jones, you and He-Man will team up and fight me. Anyway,
well, at least we've got Alec Baldwin. Oh wait, no, at least we've got David Hasselhoff. Hold on a second.
Hold it.
Oh no,
dude, David Hasselhoff.
That's disheartening.
This David Hasselhoff has my birthday. It's July 17th, and I'm embarrassed.
Is he from Utah?
No, but did you know? And I said this on another show, but I did not know that he was that video existed of him drunk eating the hamburger off the floor. I had never seen it.
That's the best video ever.
How did I get away with not seeing that? I don't understand.
And not even that shocking. I mean, there's video of Tom Sizemore doing things that are just 100% more disgusting than that.
There's another guy. I like Tom Sizemore, and he's a douche. Ugh. What is with these douches? Anyway.
Maybe you got to be a douche.
I guess. And we have a show thanks to many of them. So good job, douches. Right. Keep it up. Let's get to our film sack checklist of the day. This is where we talk about some of the stuff that appears in a lot of movies. We'll see if it matches up. Did anyone barf? No. I'm going to just chuck barf. No one's barfing in our movies.
No one's barfing in the
heart. It could have. I'm surprised that no one barfed in this movie. I was watching for it, and there's so many opportunities. It's one of the ways you scare somebody when you're a ghost.
Yeah, somebody should have barfed.
I think barfing is mostly rated R.
You think so? That's an R-rated thing?
Yeah.
No, we got to keep it in the list because it's taken from what we call the bare butt principle. You know, Daryl the Tip Giver has stated that somebody throws up in every movie, and it's almost like it's not just that there are exceptions to this rule, but it's hardly a rule, but we still have to keep.
Won't someone think of the bare butt? What else? Boobies, no. Although you could tell Gina Davis was just itching to get that out. So she waited till the fly.
She was maybe uncomfortable. Get out of that.
Yeah. That tablecloth. Yeah.
Yeah, that was nice with a hole in it. Moo moo. Stereotypes. Emo kids, rich snobby people, rich dude whose wife and daughter don't get him, but he's kind of a nice guy. But then in real life, he's a total douche.
Otho is a complete stereotype.
Yeah, totally.
They totally stereotyped nosy realtors.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Totally. She hardly did anything after this movie. I looked her up. Black guy dies first. There were no black people in this film. Really, this, once again, reflective of 85 through about 95 in most movies.
Well, would you count the burned guy, the burned victim?
I don't know.
He was pretty black.
You couldn't tell.
Black, yeah.
You couldn't
and he was dead.
Sure, that's true. So we'll give it that one.
Actually, there were some on the football team, too.
Oh, yeah. Because that's a good stereotype. Yeah. Throw that into stereotypes while we're at it.
Yeah.
Only black kids play football. let's see. Decapitation. Lots of them.
Oh, yes.
Finally. Very comedic goofy. You know, severed heads were goofy in this movie, but still, there's plenty of that going on.
And severed bodies, too,
Star Trek Connection, while there were a number of them, the number one is Winona Ryder was in the last Star Trek movie as Spock's mother.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's so funny. My wife is like, no way, is that Winona Ryder? I was like, yeah, that's her. No, that girl's actually pretty. And I'm like, well, that's her.
Yeah.
Winona Ryder's pretty.
She's okay. She's all right. She looks a little like her Edward Scissorhands grandma
She looks the best in that Star Trek movie that I've seen her in a long time.
Yeah, she looked great. Maybe she's on the mend. She's not a douche like everyone else again.
Maybe so.
She's had her douche period. Oh, that's a terrible combination of words.
That's wrong.
I did not mean it. I didn't mean it the way it came out. Shouldn't even say that. All right, I'm not talking about anything to do with anything anymore.
All right.
Someone peeing. Ah, crap, that's next on the list. Someone peeing.
The way it came out.
Nobody peed that I'm aware
nobody
of.
Peed.
I'm pretty
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, there weren't even any easy gags where they snuck up on someone on a toilet. Yeah.
Didn't Beetlejuice pee?
Well, he should have, because that character
didn't
seemed like
he should. Didn't he
pee on something? I could totally visualize him facing away from the camera, like peeing on the model or something, but I can't remember.
Did he?
That's just Michael Keaton. You're just visualizing Michael Keaton.
Yeah, that's true. I'm Batman.
That's the way he rolls.
He's peeing on the Batmobile. Wilhelm Scream? Nope. I'd listened really close on this one. Didn't hear it. Bad guy with a theme song or sound? Sure. The whole movie was bad, and it had a theme song. Kenobi type? I think the smoker lady probably qualifies the best.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's a good call, Scott.
She had real advice, you know, seemed to have her ear to the ground or whatever, and she had smoke coming out of her neck. Animal. So she had a lot in common with Ben Kenobi. Animal or robot as comedy relief? No.
No. But this is a comedy.
Sure.
So.
Of course. Kid named Billy, Bobby, Peter, or Lydia? Oh, there's Lydia. I just keep inserting that name whenever it's convenient. a cave that looked like a vagina. Think about it.
I think the fireplace did.
Sure.
Fireplace,
I'll give it that.
Or the
little rock guy coming out of there. Good times. That was the birthing of the dude. Okay, so that's our list. Pretty good list, I think, this week. There's lots of connections there. This Star Trek connection is so freaking easy, you guys. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Everybody's on Star Trek.
All roads lead to Star Trek.
Totally. It's the 6 degrees of Star Trek. Forget about Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Who cares about him? He's probably been on Star Trek for all I know. but he denies it, just like Friday the 13th. So let's move on to our Twitter post. This sums up in a very short manner what you guys would call this movie. Let's start this time with Randy Jordan.
Let's see here. I am going with Beetlejuice. I have a feeling there's something very interesting behind that door.
But not probably. Turns out not so interesting.
No, that's it.
Okay, very nice.
Nope, that's it. You got to carry on from there. That's all I'm giving you.
And Brian Ibbett?
You got your romantic comedy in my Tim Burton. You got your Tim Burton in my romantic comedy.
Nice. I love that. Good. That's dead on, too. They tried to mash those together. It's a mashup. Brian Dunaway, could you please, in 140 characters or less, sum it up?
Sure. Beetlejuice didn't ruin your career. Shoplifting did.
Nice.
Nice. Nice hat.
Ooh, that's a stinger. I remember liking her in, what's the movie with the dude from Dead Poets Society? Reality Bites. Was it Reality Bites?
Oh, Reality Bites, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a total angsty, grungy 90s thing.
Yeah.
I thought she was so hot in that
movie. And
I
think just about the best thing that Janine Garofalo has done movie-wise.
Besides Mystery Men.
You know, I like Mystery Men, but I think...
Until the end. Mystery Men is brilliant until the end.
Yes.
It really is. It's so great right up till the end.
No, she's really actually quite good in The Truth About Cats and Dogs. It's just that Janine Garofalo hates seeing herself on screen. She won't act.
Well, she was good in 24 last year. She was on all year.
You're right. She was.
She was the computer
was
specialist
fine.
On the FBI thing. She was quite good.
But I mean, Winona Ryder is unimpeachable. I mean, she's the kind of thing that you get together with all your coworkers at lunch and make your laminated list of the five hottest women that you'd have to be allowed to spend a night with. Winona Ryder
good
pops
job,
up
Randy.
A lot.
Way to class that up.
Look. What I was going to say.
This is laminated?
Here's the thing about Winona Ryder, though. She is beautiful. I agree with Randy. She's a beautiful person, beautiful actress. She looks great even now. She's born in 71. She's just barely younger than me. She looks amazing, but big butt here. Well, not big butt that way. But
here's Jeffrey Jones slapped it.
A big caveat is that her voice does not match the beauty. So when she talks, it drives me bananas. So it's like, ooh, this beautiful person comes in and then she goes,
Hey, everybody. I'm an angsty teenager. I have a total pain in the butt for my parents. I'm going to wear this huge wig.
She just isn't. She has a terrible voice. Terrible voice. Yeah,
I can agree with that. I can see that.
Ugh.
Yeah.
But she's hot. I'll give her that. Okay.
She doesn't talk very much in most of her movies, so.
Well, she is given an opportunity to, but then
yeah.
I think they cut her back.
That's probably what they do. Oh, my God. Did you hear her?
I'm pissed. I'm going to go steal stuff.
Cut those lines. Have her standing there.
She's terrible. Just have her look good.
Dub her voice with Glenn Close.
What?
I'd love to watch
Dub
that.
Dub her voice with Glenn Close. What a weird.
That was what they did with what's-her-face. Southern accent for the Tarzan movie. What was it? Not Tarzan the Ape Man, but Greystoke. Yes.
Oh, that's her?
It's not Winona Ryder. But
No, it's
the actress, the Southern actress, whose name I can't remember right now, but I'll.
But
I'll
that's Glenn Close doing her voice?
That's Glenn Close doing her voice,
oh
yeah.
Oh, my God.
And they didn't tell her that they were going to do that until she saw the movie.
Wow, dude.
That is hilarious. Well, I sound great.
This is the best job I ever had. Thank you so much.
That's,
all right.
That's pretty bad.
Well, here's what you missed when you went out of the room for a moment to find out why your aunt was complaining about her catheter being too sore. This is what you missed. Winona Ryder is the original emo kid. It's creepy when Jeffrey Jones kisses Winona Ryder and then pats her butt. Robert Goulet cameo for the win. Gina Davis needs a damn haircut. I don't remember. I don't remember the rule being say his name wrong three times, but you guys already corrected me on that, so forget it. Most ridiculous product placement ever with the Minute Maid orange juice. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. I forgot about the old black cardboard boxes instead of the bright white ones they have now.
What are you talking about? Oh, yeah. The printing on them used to be black. But it was so, like, painfully, like, placed.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Slow-moving thing with our name on it.
Sponsored by.
They may as well have done that. Anyway, that's what you missed. Let's tell you guys what we have coming up next week on FilmSack. I actually don't remember. Oh, it's Labyrinth.
Oh,
Labyrinth.
Wow.
Talk about your Muppets and your David Bowies. Your David Bowies.
And your Jennifer Connelly.
Your very young Jennifer Connelly. I want to say this movie was 87, 86, 87.
Really?
Yeah.
I would have thought it'd been older, but it might be. You might be correct.
The rumor was Jennifer Connelly turned down this job to be Lydia in this movie because she was busy doing that Muppet movie and didn't have time.
So, good choice.
Yeah, good choice, I think. She's a fine actress now. She's great.
Oh, yeah.
And she's not stealing things.
Not at all, that we're aware of.
And there might be boobies. No, there won't.
No, not in Labyrinth.
No.
Not this one.
Well, David Bowie. Anyway. So that's going to do it for us. Don't forget to visit us on the web. Go to filmsack.com. Check out the archives, links to show notes, and all kinds of cool stuff happening in there, and archives of this very show. Email us at filmsack@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/filmsack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Randy, for Brian, and for Winona Ryder, and Jeffrey Jones and his sweet-tasting nose. We'll see you next time.
Beetlejuice.
All right. House, house, house.
Me, 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 me. Me, me, me.
I licked a pervert.
I licked that pervert Principal Rooney on the nose.
She's had her douche period. Oh, that's a terrible combination of words.
That's wrong.
I did not mean it. I didn't mean it the way it came out.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.